Everybody give a rousing Tulare County welcome to our warmest speaker, Elf.
I'm Elm, an alcoholic.
Hi, Elm.
I'm super nervous, so I'm really happy it's a small meeting. And then we'll get on to the main attraction and speaker. So I am definitely an alcoholic. Most of you guys know my story. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My mom was a stripper, and she was a bikini mud wrestler in Vegas. And my dad was a truck driver, and we grew up. My dad's a really, really good guy, really Christian, good Christian man, but for some reason, just really bad with money. So even though I grew up down south in Orange County, we had, you know, we were like squatters. We were like living in campers and living in vans and boats and just really poor. And so I grew up, and I always thought, you know, if I was just blonde enough, you know, because I'm from Orange County, or Paris Hilton was really big then, oh God, if I could be Paris Hilton, you know, or if I had enough money, you know, things would be different. And I learned in this program that it's not the outside. You know, I got money in this program through the steps, you know, and I got super cute in this program, you know. Just kidding. I didn't even shower before this. So I just have something inside of me that wants more to be filled, and there will never be enough for me, except for a spiritual solution. But I didn't know that, so I'm insane, you know. I chase that high, and I chase that drink. And so I went to the foster system when I was 15, and we started drinking and using. We would AWOL from our group home at like 14 and 15, like hitchhiking around, and you know, I'm like, hey, do you have any weed? You know, like that. We were real badasses, you know. Hey, yeah, we smoke. And then just, you know, just really lonely, really just had no clue how to do life, you know, just no idea. So I started drinking and using in my teens, and it progressed. And right when I got that first taste, I thought, this is, you know, for that first time, I was like, I'm good enough, you know, like, I'm not blonde, and I'm not, you know, super wealthy heiress, but I'm okay, you know, for the first time, I'm okay. And I was like, you know what, then I could turn on you and be like, well, you're not fucking blonde either, and you're not a wealthy heiress, and you know what, I'm okay, and maybe you're not okay, maybe it's you. And the only way I could get that was by drinking and using. So I chased that, and I didn't have jobs till I came to this program. I didn't know how to work. I did know how to go to school and get some FAFSA. So I backpacked the country for 2 years off of FAFSA. And it was really fun, you know. My drinking and using isn't, it wasn't all bad. There was a lot of good times. I got to do a lot of fun things when I was 20 years old, you know. It was like the first time I thought, okay, life's all right, you know. Life's good. College is fun, and traveling and fun, and I can do this. I can do this adult thing. But it's a progressive disease, I learned, and, you know, for me, it gets worse, never better. It's always going to be just like it was for my mom and her dad. And it's jails, institutions, and death, you know. I guess I should say my mom died when she was 45 of the disease from cirrhosis, and it's an ugly death, you know. But even though I saw that, I still would drink and use it. I would say that's not going to happen to me. So when I was 22, I hit bottom, and I was up in Humboldt, and they were putting me, I was completely 5150'd from drinking and using. I thought all these crazy things that weren't happening was going on. I thought the FBI was after me. I thought there was like people watching me in my windows because I'm so important, you know, like nobody gives a fuck what I'm doing. But in my head, you know, like I'm so important, the whole government's watching me. And I got put in a mental hospital, and they said, we're going to lock you up for 3 to 5 years. I was 21 years old from drugs and alcohol. They were going to lock me up because I was a Jake. I was just straight gone. And I remember them saying that they told my dad, they said, she doesn't have mental problems, even though she's completely completely in another reality. She has a drug and alcohol problem, and if she doesn't get sober, she's going to die at a young age. So my dad brought me here because my dad's really loving and he wanted to help me, and they said put her in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's, I got here at 22 years old. I was, you know, looking, I came from Humboldt, so I looked like a hippie, you know, I had like all these piercings and all these tattoos, and I wore fake fur, like a pimp, like I would, like, walk around like a pimp, you know, and I wore fishnets, and nothing I said made sense. My friend Sarian, would be like, yeah, you would talk, and you'd start off making sense, and then just nothing, like, there'd be, like, just crazy for, like, as far as the eye can see, and then I'd come back, and you know, this is the first place that, you guys, for in a really long time, said you don't, you said you can just stay, you said don't talk that much, and when I try, like, my sponsor would be like, but keep coming back, we'll love you till you love yourself. And that was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I didn't know how to have a job. I didn't know how to have friends, you know. The last job I had was prostituting for no money. I'm very bad, bad prostitute. like these girls I see nowadays, I'm like, you can do what? You know, I'm like doing pizza and like showers. So that was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, you know? So anyways, I know we want to hear Erica. So you guys don't want to hear my prostitution stories. So I came in here and I didn't, you know, my first 2 years, I didn't talk about the steps. I talked about boys. You know, I talked about Pine, and I talked about if only I had a job and money. But you guys, you know, nobody said, I spilled more beer than you've ever drank. No one said anything like that. They said, you're completely crazy. I remember someone telling my sponsor I was like a feral animal when I first got here. I was so offended. And but now I look back and, yeah, it was just, if you're a feral animal right now, welcome home. This is the place for feral animals. And so my second year, I started working the steps, and I started looking at myself, and I started to realize that, you know, it wasn't how I grew up, and it wasn't, you know, poor me. Like, I was thanked too much growing up or anything. It was, you know, I have a disease, and I'm not responsible for that disease, but I'm responsible for my own recovery. And a lot of the other byproducts of my disease, I make my own life unmanageable. I swear to God, that was a revelation. I thought I was powerless over everything. You guys taught me that sentence when I got here, and I was, oh, I'm so powerless. I can't. I'm powerless over that. And my sponsor looked at me like, yeah, you're not powerless over that. You have to show up to work on time. I can't. I'm powerless. This is traffic, you know. Well, maybe if you don't leave at 8:55 for a 9 o'clock job, you know. So I got to learn to take responsibility. I really grew up here. I didn't have a car. I learned how to get a car, you know. I learned that my behavior is insane, and that was I did the definition. I got to define all the words and all the 12 steps, and when I saw the word insanity is purposely trying to hurt yourself, self-destructing, I mean, that's what I did. I didn't know emotionally how to live life till I got here, and I would destruct. You'd look at me weird. You know what? Fuck you. I'm going to go drink, you know. I had no concept of you guys. It was all me reacting to you. So, you know, God, my God's changed and evolved over the years. I came in with no conception. Then I came in with, like, all these conceptions. If you're new, I want to encourage you. You know, I went through Hinduism. My first 6 months, I got a gigantic Hindu goddess tattooed. Like, I'm from Huntington. I'm like, a white girl from Huntington. I don't even know any Hindu people. I didn't grow up with any Hindu people, but I did yoga. So got this tattooed, and then I practiced. I went back to church, and then I practiced paganism, and Wicca. I practiced Wicca, you know, and I just did whatever it was because I didn't know you could say no to God. I thought, like, when you got here, you just, like, had to say yes. So I just picked up and went running with everything, and it worked. You know, 6 years later, my God looks a lot different than what I initially thought, but my God's my God's grown and changed genders and changed, you know, how I relate to my God. But the things that haven't changed is it's a loving God of my own understanding. And that's the only rule if you're new. And how cool is that? We just want you to have a loving God, you know? If it was up to me, if I was your God, I'd be like a dictator. I'd be an abusive dictator, you know? Because that's who I am. Like, I want to take advantage when I'm not living spiritually. But that's not what you guys told me. You said use the group. And you don't have to find a God, but maybe, possibly try it. And I got to do my fourth step here with my sponsor, and my first fifth step took, I think it took like 5 hours, you know, and she bought food for me. She bought my favorite food. We got Gozen sushi, and, you know, that was a really big deal that someone would want to listen and then look at my part. And there was a lot of painful things that, a lot of like sexual out there, tricking stuff that I thought I had no part in. And my sponsor lovingly said, you know, what did you do to put yourself in this position as a grown adult, you know? And I was like, what? So I got to see my part again. And every day I try to work on step 6 and 7. There's a lot of character defects. My character defects are like a radio. Some of the ones I came in with, I don't really struggle with. You know, they've turned down. They're at like a low hum. But then new ones pop up, you know? I'm an extreme person. That's who I am, you know, and even with the steps, I'll take them really extreme and I'll just try to work on these character defects of mine until my husband's like, stop inventorying, stop. But that's okay, because this program, over time, if I just stay, and if you guys just stay, it all balances out, you know, and my extreme behavior starts to mellow. So that's 6, 7, I did my amends. You guys can hear about that at meetings. And I continue to grow my conscious contact every day with my higher power. And I trust more than anything that the most important word in step 3 is care. Like, I have a God who cares for me today. And I don't always understand the plan. There's jobs I haven't got. There's family members who don't want me anything to do with me. And they're not in my life, and I don't know why, but I know that God has an infinitely better plan than I could ever hope for. The fact that I'm even up here in a microphone, I was in a mental hospital talking about, I thought the fucking Kardashians were after me back in the day. Kardashians, microphone, you guys are listening to me, you know? Like, it's crazy that I can even, I even have a semblance of a life. So if you're new, oh, and I have beautiful, amazing girlfriends today, and I had no friends, like Brittany, Erica, Monica, Blythe, Hannah, Sarian. I have a grip load of girlfriends today. So if you're new, I encourage you to stay. Do what we do if you want when we have. Do what we do. And use the phone list, you know. And you can stay sober one day at a time. And if you don't believe that, just trust us and listen to our experience. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, can we give our main speaker another arousing Tulare County welcome?
Hi, my name's Erica, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Erica.
Okay, so I would like to say I'm a grateful alcoholic, and thank you guys for allowing me to be up here sharing my story with you guys, my experience, strength, and hope. I did one other meeting similar to this, and I was terrified the whole time, and I don't know if I ever can get across, like, the feelings I have in my heart, or, like, if my story even lines up. I try to, like, piece it together. There's some people I listen to that I'm like, wow, that flowed really well. Mine's kind of choppy and confused because that's how my life was before I got sober. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I am a product of divorced parents. They both got remarried and had more kids, so I have, like, lots of brothers and sisters, like, that aren't related to each other. So I was pretty much always striving for attention, but also kind of shy. You know, I had, like, a kind of a rough relationship with my mom growing up. I always felt like she hated me. But, you know, in hindsight, it's like, I was one of four kids on her side, and we were wild. So she was just doing the best she could. And, you know, I was not the oldest crazy one, and I was not the youngest baby. So, like, you know, I wasn't like the focal point, I guess. I, you know, went to high school. I had loving parents. I was a daddy's girl. I never, you know, thought as a high school person, like, I'm going to be an alcoholic one day. I always felt like I had a lot of control. I started drinking and smoking pot at a young age. And in high school, I was kind of like the first one with a license. So, you know, while other girls were getting shit-faced, I was like driving them around, kind of thinking like, haha, I'm like more controlled than you, you know, that type of thing. And then, you know, I was always like super into relationships. I was like a relationship queen, like give me a boyfriend and that's just going to make me happy. Like my life is about a guy and that's all I care about is like him and his dreams. I'm just going to like support him and like, you know, hopefully he'll want to like marry me one day or something. So, you know, I ended up at the age of like 27, like a bunch of failed relationships. I ended up buying my own house. I decided, you know, I wasn't going to wait for some guy to do things for me. I was going to do it for myself. So I told my parents, like, I want to buy a house. And they were like, oh, sure, okay, buy a house, Erica. And I was like, you know, I'm going to show you. I'm going to buy this house. So I did it. I got, you know, my own realtor, and I did it all myself. And they were pretty shocked when I said I was going to move out. And I think they were really proud of me. And, you know, I worked at a bank for 6 years, and you know, I tried really hard with a certain person that I kind of had an on and off relationship with for a while, and that just ended up tanking. And, I started drinking on the weekends, partying, cocaine, ecstasy, all that kind of stuff. And I'm still like holding a job. I'm still, you know, a productive member of society. I'm still paying taxes. And I'm doing okay. And, at a certain point, my drinking kind of got a little more accelerated. More nights of the week, I was drinking heavily, kind of going into the bar at 4:30 after work or 5, and then, you know, going home and passing out, just falling asleep and waking up for work the next day and doing it all over again. And so let's just say that my weekends were lasting longer. They were more like Thursday to Sunday instead of like Friday to Sunday. And I ended up trying methamphetamine. It's a big part of my story, so I know we don't talk a lot about other substances and Alcoholics Anonymous, but I am an alcoholic and I am a drug addict as well. I tend to relate heavier to alcoholics. I enjoy the fellowship, so I go to Alcoholics Anonymous and I work those steps. So after trying meth, everything kind of just like fell apart. Things plummeted fast. It was a fast downward spiral. I was like, how did I get here? You know, I'm showing up to work. Like my makeup looked really good, but I had like stayed up all night long. And, you know, it showed in me. Like it was hard for me to stay awake while I was standing up and doing my job. I was sleeping like on an average of like 3 hours every night, and it was really rough. So I ended up kind of losing my shit. I lost my mind pretty much. I was freaking out a lot, and my parents had to talk to me, and they're like, what's going on? You know, they knew there was like an issue. They knew there was something happening, but they couldn't quite put like a finger on it. Like, what's happening with you? You know, I weighed like 98 pounds. And I didn't want to tell them that I was using meth, so I just said, you know what, I've been doing a lot of cocaine. And they're like, well, how about you just go to rehab, you know? So I'm like, okay, going to rehab. And so I go to rehab. I stay 30 days, and it's recommended for me to stay like 60 and do an aftercare program, and I end up leaving at 30. I come home, and I'm like, I got this. I'm never going to drink again. I'm good. And like 4 days later, I'm drinking a beer. I'm smoking out of a pipe. I'm just ruining my life all over again. So, you know, I end up getting fired from my bank job. And I had it coming. You know, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I was, like, late a lot. I was cocky. I had a huge ego. You know, I would, like, forget about the things I had done. And I'm like, I have a good streak of, like, being on time for, like, you know, 3 weeks in a row, but like the month before that I was late like every day, you know, so that was my life. So I end up losing my job, and I hang on to alcohol and drugs for like another 2 years. of just demoralization, where I'm just, you know, like giving myself away to alcohol and drugs, and spending all the money I had saved up, selling my house, spending all the money that I had earned, and then some, because I, you know, didn't pay off any bills. I still had things in credit the last time I, you know, I had to pay off a lot this past year, basically, is what I'm saying. And things all kind of came to a head one day. I didn't have anywhere else to go. You know, I was kind of like a unwelcome hanger-oner at people's houses, like doing their drugs, smoking their cigarettes. Had no hustle. I was just like a bum. So when I finally get to that point where, you know, I have nothing left in me, I drive to my aunt's house, my godmother. I remember I had a pipe in my car and I threw it out the window while I was driving, which is like really reckless and ridiculous of me, but that's what I did. And I got there and I told them, I know I haven't seen you in 2 years. I haven't been to a Christmas or Thanksgiving, but I really need help and my parents will talk to me. And it was God's will that my aunt said, come on in. And she let me in her house and they did a 12-step call. Luckily, her dad is an old-timer in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he came over and called another one of his good friends, and they got me into a rehab, and it was the best day of my life by far. I look back on that day, and, you know, my sobriety date's 7/7/17, and I just thought, like, this is, like, a magical number. I was still really, like, kind of crazy, so I was like, this is all falling into place, you know, like... it was kind of wild, but so I go into rehab and I don't talk much because, like I had a lot of stuff going on up here. Like I couldn't have someone just having a normal conversation with me without me like thinking some weird thoughts about them. And I don't know how to explain that in a better way, but, I still to this day, like think about those times, you know, the crazy thoughts I had, the insanity. I can remember back at the state of mind that I was in. And I can think, like, what the fuck was I thinking? But, I, you know, I was living in a parallel reality to actual, like, our reality that we live in. Like, every thought I had was running this way with actual reality, if that makes sense. They weren't ever going to line up. So, I did 4 months in rehab, and, you know, I was, it was time for me to go home, and my mom was, like, it happened to land on a time where she was, like, going to go visit my sister Brigitte, and it was after, like, my 90 days, so that would have been 3 months, and she calls me, and she's like, you know what, you're going to do another month, because you can't come home to my house without us being there. So that speaks to the kind of fear that my family was in. For themselves and for me, because they just weren't going to risk it. They would rather pay for me to be in rehab for another month than me to come home and, like, go out and relapse, because that's what I had done previously. And by God's grace, I got it this time, and it was, like, a miracle. Like, it was nothing short of a miracle, because, you know, for a person, and there are many people who knew me while I was using, for them to look at me at that point and then look at me now, you just know that God had a hand in it. And, you know, I know not everybody is specifically religious in this program, but, I do believe in a higher power that I call God. So, you know, I, got out of rehab. I decided to move away because I was freaked out about being in Tulare. Tulare is where, you know, my kind of downfall was. I was ashamed more than anything, like outright ashamed. I was scared to see people from the bank. I was scared to see my family members, people that I used with, because I was like that crazy tweaker girl. I wasn't like, oh, look, there's Erica, like the other homeboys. They're like, oh, God, there's Erica, because she's, you know what I mean? Like, ugh, don't hang out with that girl because she's crazy. So, you know, I was just didn't want to be in my own skin. I just felt uncomfortable. I semi-hated myself, you know what I mean? It got to that point because I just thought, like, why couldn't I just be, you know, like my sisters? Why couldn't I just party and have a good time? So starting my step work, actually starting it for the second time was another God thing for me, because I got to learn about my disease, you know, that I am powerless, that, you know, I wasn't choosing to pick up and use every time. I was, like, powerless. I was a victim of myself. And I got through a lot of time using and drinking, and nothing, like, super bad happened to me, and I'm really grateful for that. I some people might say it's, like, God's grace, or I really can't explain it, but, you know, I was, like, out there on the streets, 2 a.m., walking around, like, in the not great part of town, you know, because I wanted to go get a cigarette, because I couldn't sit around because I was not comfortable. So I'll move on to the happier times. So I end up moving away, and that was rough. There was no sobriety where I was living. There were no meetings. You had to drive like 45 minutes out of town to get to a meeting, and I just wasn't really comfortable doing that in a place I didn't know, because it was Arkansas and there's like nothing there. You know what I mean? You can like drive for a while. There's no lights. You can just see the stars. It's quite beautiful, but it's really rural. So I stayed there for 3 months. I was living with an active alcoholic. And if that's not enough to make you just want to come home, it made me want to come home. I was like, I can't do this to myself. You know, I spent way too much time dealing with a bunch of bullshit to live with another alcoholic. It didn't make sense. So I came home and I faced my fears. You know, I faced my family. I was home for holidays. I just like put on a brave face and showed up to birthday parties, you know, where my aunts and my cousins were, and they were all kind of like shocked, and you know, they thought the same thing I did, like, wow, she's being brave right now. So I end up meeting this chick, and she's like, you know what, I know someone that I think should be your sponsor. So I'm like, okay. So I go to a meeting and I hear her share, and I'm like, totally want her to be my sponsor. So I just went right up to her and I said, hey, will you be my sponsor? And, you know, if you know me, it was kind of out of character for me. I'm real prideful. I want to like think, oh, I don't need to be asking people these questions and stuff like that. But like, it kind of took a lot, you know, and it's mostly because I'm insecure. Like when I say I'm prideful, it's I have insecurities. You know what I mean? And I don't want to put that out there. I don't want to display that I'm like nervous and afraid. The funny thing is that my body gives it away. Like right now I'm super red because I'm nervous, you know, like I just can't hide it. You know, there is no hiding it. So I get my sponsor and I get into the steps and things start happening for me. You know, like I apply for a couple jobs. I get like the second job I apply for. It has like some hours that are kind of cool. Like I'm going to work at 5 a.m., getting off at like 1. I have time to go to tons of meetings, which was really amazing. I get into Tuffy Paw at the time, and you know, I go to their first elections, and I'm just like, yeah, I want to be here. I want to be with these people who are like having a good time in sobriety, who are not like, you know, oh, I'm sober right now. It's like, yeah, I am sober, you know, because that was one of my greatest fears was like, am I ever going to have fun again? Am I ever going to be able to like relate to people? What are we going to bond over? And I figure out it's not, you know, alcohol, it was a tool for me to bond with people, but it doesn't have to be. So that's where I'm at today is like, I can actively join in a conversation and be myself, and not have to be intoxicated to do it. And, so I end up, you know, starting the steps with this sponsor, and it was enlightening and it was rough. Like we come to the inventory, right? Step 4. And she's like, I need you to write down like the people who have harmed you, like who you feel like have done you wrong. And I'm like, no one did me wrong. Like, you know, I'm at that stage where I'm just so grateful to be like alive and normal that I feel like no one did me wrong. You know, no one ever hurt my feelings. I did this all to myself. And at the end of the day, like, yeah, I did do it to myself, but it's untrue for me to sit there and act like I didn't have any hurt feelings when my mom would not answer the door when I would show up because she's like, oh, there's Erica again, like asking for money. I don't want to see her. She's all messed up. Like those things, you know, she had the right to feel her feelings, but they did hurt me and I needed to put that on paper. And me trying to keep that inside was just really keeping me sick. So the interesting thing about my steps is like, Elle was saying, like, you know, my step four today is completely different than my step four whenever I first got sober, like way different. You know, I'm all like trying to be that like person who doesn't have any feelings and, you know, did it all to herself. But now I'm like, how dare him, you know, blah, 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 you know, and she's just like, who are you now? It's kind of funny. Like, it's interesting the growth that a person goes through and even the regression, you know what I mean? I'm like this like super spiritual person. And then all of a sudden I'm like stepping out. Whoa, character defects all over the place. Like, I pray a lot today to center myself, you know, most of the time just for God's will, because I know that some hard things that we face, we are supposed to go through. You know, life's not always easy, and that's just always how it's going to be. I'm trying to think of another step that meant a lot to me. It took me a long time to do my steps. I kind of got to a stagnant place. I started a job at a rehabilitation center for women, and I started working nights, and that was like a true test of me in general. I ended up getting pregnant. In my pregnancy, I would have like tons of using dreams and just feel that like I would have a dream that I was pregnant and using, and I lost my job because I was getting high. And it was the worst feeling I think I've felt since getting sober. It's just that horrible pit in your stomach, like I messed everything up. I don't ever want to actually have to feel that. My husband talks about his using dreams where he's like, you know, about to like shoot himself with a needle and then it doesn't happen. He's upset. I'm like, that's never happened to me. I'm like upset at myself, like pissed, you know, like how could you do this? Like now you have to go back to rehab for like another 4 months or whatever. Horrible times. But you know, I basically am in constant contact with my higher power because I have to be, or else I'm like batshit crazy, like bossy, think I know what's right about everything. Like, if you think you're bossy, have a kid, because as soon as the baby comes out of you, it's like you own it, and like no one else can like call it pet names, and like, you know what I mean? Like Robert was trying to call him, what was he calling it? Bebe. And I'm like, don't say it like that, you know? And I don't know why, but it was just like a vicious like anger in me. And, you know, that went away with time, but you go through all these emotions sober without any buffer. You know, and you really have to learn how to manage them. I had never done that before. I spent lots of years smoking weed. So even at the least, I was always high on pot. So living a completely sober life is just like a miracle. I still do like exhilarating things to get my my adrenaline going. Like we were in San Diego not that long ago, and we decided we were in a hot tub, and we're like, we're going to run into the ocean and then come back to the hot tub. You know what I mean? That was like the big thing. Like, you know what I mean? And it was so euphoric, and we had such a great time. And that's the stuff I get to do today in my sobriety, is be a wife and a mother and jump out of hot tubs and go into the ocean. That's my big story. And to be honest, that's kind of all I have. I don't know where I'm even at in time, but I mean, I think I'm good. Okay. Thanks, guys.